was 1943. Life had settled down, and the years had passed for Bailey and I with our mother, Vivian, in San Francisco. And now, age 15, I was getting a chance to get reacquainted with my father. Just like the movie stars Jane Withers and Donald O'Connor, I was going on vacation. My father, Daddy Bailey, had invited me to spend the summer with him in Southern California, and I was jumpy with excitement. I expected him to live in a manor house, surrounded by grounds and liveried staff. Daddy Bailey had a girlfriend, Dolores, who was to meet me at the train station.
Marguerite?
The platform had emptied, and we had walked past each other time after time.
Marguerite?
Hello, Dolores.
I guessed her to be in her early 20s, though she was the height of a child. She must have been horrified to find herself with a nearly 6-foot prospective stepdaughter who was not even pretty. Instead of a manor house and servants, Daddy lived in a trailer park on the outskirts of a town that was itself the outskirts of a town. Dolores kept the house clean with the orderliness of a coffin. Artificial flowers reposed waxily in glass vases. She was on close terms with her washing machine, ironing board, and duster. And then...
Oh, no!
I came along.
How many times do I have to tell you to be careful when you are dusting ornaments in your room, Marguerite?
Well, they're quite slippery.
The dresser in my room was covered in little white porcelain figures. Was. Until I held one too tightly, or crunched off a leg, or dropped one... again.
Oh, dear!
We indulged in a test of strength for weeks as Daddy stood figuratively on the sidelines.
So, Marguerite, do you like your mother?
Of course I do. She is beautiful and funny and very kind.
Not Vivian. Dolores. Do you like Dolores?
No. She's mean and petty and full of pretense. She doesn't like me either. She thinks I'm tall and arrogant and I'm not clean enough for her.
Well, that's life.
Daddy was an excellent cook, and he worked in the kitchen of a naval hospital, though both he and Dolores said he was a medical dietitian for the United States Navy. Mexican food was his specialty, and one evening he announced...
Tomorrow... I'm going to Mexico to buy some food for the weekend.
Okay.
And I'll be taking Marguerite with me.
What?
It'll give her an opportunity to practice the Spanish she learned at school. Isn't that right, Reedy?
Yes.
The dirt roads of Mexico fulfilled all my longing for the unusual. As we drove through border towns and headed for the interior, signs informed me that we were heading for Ensenada. We pulled up in the dirt yard of a cantina where half-clothed children chased mean-looking chickens around and around. A woman's voice sang out.
Mayali! Mayali!
Hey! Hola!
We were herded into a long room with a bar at the end. Bailey was obviously the hero of the hour. And as he warmed under the uninhibited shows of affection, I saw a new side to the man. He had never belonged in stamps. How maddening to have been born in a cotton field with aspirations of grandeur. Here he was, sufficiently impressive. He was American. He was black. He spoke Spanish fluently. He had money and could drink tequila with the best of them. I was introduced as...
La Nina de Bell.
I ate chicharrones, crackling in a greasy newspaper, danced and drank the extra sweet and sticky Coca-Cola with the nearest approach to abandonment I had ever experienced. It was only when the afternoon sun failed to light the room through the single window I realized that I hadn't seen my father... for some time.
¿Dónde está mi padre?
Nobody took my question seriously. Maybe it was my formal Spanish. A fog of panic began to suffocate me. He wasn't in the room. Had my drink been spiked? Dancers were blurring before my eyes. Daddy was gone. Had he sold me to the locals and was on his way back home with the money in his pocket? I had to get to the door. People stopped me with, "Donde vas?"
Daddy? Daddy! Daddy?
Outside, Daddy's Hudson still sat in the yard in lonely splendor. He hadn't left me after all. I decided to sit in the car and wait for him, since he couldn't have gone far. I knew he was with a woman.
I could lie down on the floor and make myself small and invisible. No chance. Oh, Lord, how could he just leave me?
I tried to staunch the flood of fear. Why was I so afraid of the Mexicans? They had been really kind to me. Daddy wouldn't let anyone harm me.
Wouldn't he? Would he?
Did he even care what happened to me?
No. Not a damn. Not a damn.
I was going to die in a Mexican dirt yard. The special person with the intelligent mind that God and I had created was to depart alone without contribution or recognition.
Really? What you doing in the car?
Where were you?
Just going for one last drink. Be right back.
Wouldn't you like to get into the car? Rest a little.
Good idea. No, not in the front. In the back seat. Just for a little while.
He tried to arrange his long legs comfortably. And then... it sounded like the beginning of a deep and long sleep. And a warning that we were going to spend the night in a car in Mexico after all. I thought fast. I had never driven a car before, but I was superbly intelligent and had good physical coordination. Could I drive?
Of course. Of course I can. Marguerite Johnson, you can do it.
I set off down the mountainside to Calexico, some 50 miles away. The challenge was exhilarating. It was me, Marguerite, against the elemental opposition. As I twisted the steering wheel and forced the accelerator to the floor, I was controlling Mexico. Aloneness, inexperience, youth, Daddy Bailey, death, insecurity, and even gravity. After what seemed like 1,001 nights of challenge, the mountain began to level off, and we finally reached the border and the guard's box. The guard stood erect, and as he saluted and barked, "Pasa," I panicked and lurched forward and crumped the car in front of me.
Policias! Por favor! Policias!
Someone said joven, meaning I was young. Another, borracha, meaning drunk. Someone got the idea to look into the car and then seeing Daddy spark out like a dead man. And they were saying, "Watch her. Don't let her out of your sight."
Mi padre! Mi padre!
Suddenly, they understood. I was not a drunken murderer, but a poor girl who was caring for her drunken father. Pobrecita.
¿Qué tiene? ¿Qué pasa?
Dad, there's been an accident.
In the glove compartment, the insurance papers. Get them and give them to the police.
The guard stuck his head in through the open window and asked Daddy to get out of the car. Never at a loss, Daddy reached into the glove compartment, took out the folded papers and the half bottle of liquor he had left there. Daddy shook hands with all the men, had a quiet word, offered them a drink. Then, miraculously, without even looking at the damaged cars, he eased himself behind the steering wheel and drove unerringly towards home.
I didn't know you could drive, Reedy. Do you like the car?
Yes.
Roll down that window, sister. The fresh air will do us both good. Get my jacket from the back seat and put it on.
Hello, kid.
Hello, Dolores.
Hello.
She was making cute kitchen curtains and threaded her attention through the eye of her needle. Not knowing what to do, I said,
"Good night,"
and went to my room.
Bailey, you've let your children come between us.
Oh, kid, you're too sensitive. The children are my children. Can't come between us unless you let them.
How can I stop it? They're doing it. You gave your daughter your jacket.
What was I supposed to do? Let her freeze to death? Is that what you'd like? Kid? Huh? You would, wouldn't you?
Bailey, you know I wanted to like your kids.
Why the hell don't you say what you mean? You're a pretentious little bitch, ain't you? That's what Marguerite called you, and she's right.
Marguerite can go to hell, Bailey Johnson. I'm marrying you. I don't want to marry your children.
No, moral pity for you, you unlucky sow. I'm going out. Good night.
In my room, I thought my father was mean and cruel. I felt sorry, and even a little guilty. I decided to go out and console her. I spoke in my best Florence Nightingale voice.
Dolores, I don't mean to come between you and Dad. I wish you'd believe me.
It is rude to eavesdrop on other people's conversations.
A deaf person would have been hard put not to hear what you said. That's all.
No, that's not all. Why don't you go back to your mother, if you got one?
Oh, I've got one. And she's worlds better than you. Prettier, too. And intelligent.
And she's a whore.
I'm going to slap you for that, you silly old bitch.
And before I could jump back, she had her arms around me. I felt something wet on my arm and looked down to find blood. I was cut. I saw a hammer in her hand, and without wondering if I would be able to take it from her, I fled. Daddy's car again offered magnificent refuge. I sat in the car, feeling the blood slip down my back as he quieted and cooled her rage. Daddy looked angry as he came toward me. He felt the damp on his trousers as he sat in a corner of blood.
What the hell was this, Marguerite?
I've been cut.
Cut? When? By whom?
Daddy, even in a critical moment, wouldn't say by who.
Dolores cut me.
How badly?
I don't know.
I thought we were en route to an emergency hospital. And so, with serenity, I made plans for my death and will. My soul would escape gracefully. Bailey was to have my books, my records, and my love from the next world. And so, I groggily surrendered myself to oblivion.